Welcome to Season 4 of the Action Research Podcast. Join Joe and Adam, who welcome Shika and Corey to the table as new co-hosts alongside their roles as producers. Shika and Corey take on the role of grad students helping ask the questions.
Speaking with experienced and emerging action researchers, they aim to contribute to this important and growing field and understand the nuance and process of action research in action. Thanks for tuning in. Now, onto your hosts.
So hi everyone, this is Corey Legasic, and I'm back with my co-host Shika, and we are welcoming back our guests from last episode, Drs. Kristen Gessling, Dana Wright, Amanda Wager, and Marit Duerst, who are the researchers and editors behind the book Engaging Youth in Critical Arts Pedagogies and Creative Research for Social Justice, Opportunities and Challenges of Arts-Based Work and Research with Young People, which came out in 2021. So you can go back to last episode and catch up with us, but we're going to jump right in.
Thank you, Corey, for the introduction. Let's just get right into our lightning round. So our first question is, what is your pet peeve around collaboration?
It's my own pet peeve against myself, and I think it has something to do with parenting, but I often say things with we. So we should go forward because we don't like, and I've realized really, I'm actually talking about my own point of view. And so there is something like really democratic and non-hierarchical about the we or parenting with we. I don't know what, but it's now annoyed me. And I think that we all actually have our own opinions and our own voices.
Do we?
Yeah, I don't know.
I think mine is when people have so many ideas and then just like don't do anything. Ooh, let me point out all these problems or make all these really great suggestions or say we should do this, but really they mean you. That's a challenge.
I would be annoyed with all of my really bad habits of time management. So maybe my pet peeve then is that time exists.
I think when people don't listen to young people in the group, like if it's really a PAR project with young people, when people are a little bit feeling superior to the young people. And I mean, maybe it's related to time. Also, like a participatory process takes a lot longer. Mm-hmm. And that's just how it is. So
nice. Thanks for being generous with that. So our next kind of question, what do you think are the common steps or phases of a YPAR project?
I think about this in terms of having to translate like part of our jobs as academics or PIs or lead researchers as having to do that translation back to the research model. So I do think about it in phases. I try to take kind of a research or scientific model and then adapt it for YPAR. There's so much time and work that goes in before research ever begins. And this is true in PAR and YPAR, right? Like my first PAR project, I was hanging out for like almost a year before I was like, hey, how about we do a study of this? And then, you know, you get into the design. Typically, you're working out the ethics, IRB, and MOU. This is also still really crucial to collaboration and establishing kind of the practices and kind of your collective's ethos and culture. And then into the data collection, data analysis. I think all of us do qualitative mixed methods, but it's like iterative. As you're collecting data, you're also assessing and interpreting what you're hearing and learning so that you can maybe create a new method or protocol or hone in what you're doing. And then analysis and interpretation and dissemination. And, you know, it's a spiral, it's a concentric circle, it's whatever frame or visual helps make sense of it, but it's all going back and forth and kind of skipping around. I'm a messy researcher.
It is important what Kristen highlighted around the relationship building piece and building trust. Sometimes we're insiders and outsiders mm-hmm. in an organization. And so if you're a little bit insider, then sometimes maybe you're already doing some work. But I do think that once it formally starts, in my experience, coming from like a youth development organizing background, there's a lot of icebreakers or team builders as part of the formal curriculum as well. And I've been in YPAR projects where we do those each time we meet, like just an icebreaker at the beginning or a team break in the afternoon or something. And then, yeah, just that also supporting, whether it's PAR or YPAR, whoever the participants are, coming up with the research question, like what's the issue that we want to focus on? Because I have heard afterwards, a lot of people feeling a lot of ownership or during, like we chose this issue, we chose this topic. So just highlighting that and also the methods. So they might decide to do surveys when the adults didn't want to, or we're kind of guiding away from that. But then it becomes apparent that that's an important piece. And then when the analysis, like collecting data and the analysis and drawing findings and recommendations, and maybe it's a presentation or some other, an artwork or, you know, some curated kind of art event, but then also taking action. And sometimes the action is a zine or an organizing project or theater, or but sometimes it's a policy change. And just also highlighting that action can look really differently depending on the goals and the context. I think it's important to also be kind of guiding and facilitating as an adult, whether you're a facilitator or a researcher. And then also that participatory piece might mean things that are different than how you envisioned it. And I think that's where there's a little bit of rub sometimes for all of us.
There's something like pre all of that, most PAR and YPAR researchers are challenged with is the grant writing part of it and the REV part, where like you're supposed to write exactly what's supposed to happen and ask for all these permissions. But the thing with YPAR and PAR is that you don't know what's going to happen because it's up to those individuals who are participating.
Thank you for your responses. Always these conversation takes me back to my own research. So why don't you tell us what are the couple of good examples of participatory method that helped you in the first phase of your YPAR project? You said relationship building as a design.
I mean, I think this is where as arts people, we have a strong advantage in that making art with a group of people can be a very quick and kind of liberatory way of jumping into building trust. I mean, everything from doing kind of exquisite corpses as icebreakers, where, you know, somebody draws the, you know, collaborative drawing activities where somebody draws the head, passes it on to the middle, passes it on to the torso, or like any kind of theater games, any kind of movement activities, those transform the space together and transform the relationships and force people out of conventional traditional modes of interacting quickly. So that way they can potentially activate some kind of vulnerability, because you need that vulnerability with each other to have the trust coalesce. It also then generates data that you can start thinking about, okay, we've just produced some knowledge together. So now we can start to say like, yeah, are there patterns? What's happening here? What do we notice? Even if it's a playful thing, you can start to see like, oh, wow, we're all drawn towards X, Y, and Z. Or it allows us to start doing that kind of meta reflection on an activity as we go forward.
Yeah, I really like what Mara was saying there, because I'm thinking also about like some of the silly times that if I was facilitating that I had to be in these icebreakers or team builders or silly, you know, silly roles. And I think especially in the traditional school system that most people by law have to go to, young people, it's so different. There's certain teachers that are really participatory or something, but in terms of how we see authority, and even if you're saying all these words, to actually be down there giggling and being silly and goofy can be a really important shift for ourselves as adults and also for the young people, especially. A little bit echoing what Mara was saying, like how you can process those, thinking about how, wow, you know, there were certain people who took leadership in this activity that didn't take it traditionally because they had a lot of good ideas, or like, oh, we listened more or we didn't to these different voices, kind of thinking about group dynamics and team dynamics, I think can really be helpful and part of the, you know, maybe the relationship building process.
What about around design? So you're talking about kind of building up group dynamics, reflecting on group dynamics, building that sense of a we. When you start moving into thinking about a project and design, what are some of the methods that you love using, getting young people really active in use of the research questions, thinking about issues that they want to think about together?
I can jump in with something is that I do a lot with map making, whether it's like physical mapping of environments, but I actually really like to get them eventually to conceptual mapping, but in a very visual way. So using works of art as inspiration for all these different ways in which you conceptually represent different ideas and their intersections and connections, but to get them visualizing things as much as possible. So that way we have something concrete to then look at, to then do, you know, that kind of iterative process of like, okay, what are we interested in here? Like recently I worked with a group of young people. I was brought in to do some YFR around ideas around youth, arts, and New York. I brought in a bunch of collage materials. It was like, everybody's going to make a collage of what those ideas mean to them. And then we could lay them all out afterwards and start to say like, oh, actually, we're starting to see these patterns. And then from those patterns, start to turn them into questions. Like, what do we want to know more? What are we curious about?
I've found that a lot of the youth PAR projects that I've been involved in or led have really been a blend of traditional and YPAR. I wrote about this in my chapter too. A lot of the young people that I've hung out with, actually, because that's what they wanted to do, is that they were there because they wanted to hang out. They mm-hmm. wanted to hang out and take pictures, or they wanted, mm-hmm. they just liked the space and they liked that they got to say what we did, that they were how they were treated. Food, this isn't about design, but it is. Yeah. Food at every event, every mm-hmm. activity. And I think about it as scaffolding, you know, from a pedagogical perspective, like what are some ways that I can provide pathways to participation for folks at different places? And if that means that they don't really want to be involved in designing the study, can I present some tools or some mm-hmm. ideas and then we workshop it or brainstorm it together to come to as participatory of a model as possible. So I think about PAR as a verb a lot. And I also feel like where I am now in terms of supporting faculty and scholars and adults who work with young people, I'm also PARing them and how they work with young people. So kind of what Dana was saying about adultism and providing them kind of schools and tools and skills to democratize their practice. Yeah, I didn't really answer the question because it's hard. It's a hard one.
I think you did. I like that idea of PAR as a verb and that this idea that you're actually PARing the adults as much or the educators or the partners. It's a nice takeaway.
One of the things that we do in theater is you call it hot seating a character. And it's kind of like, I use it as a form of explaining interview, where you take any character and we all come up with different questions and like write down the questions for whatever the character is. And then someone has to be in character and answer the questions when they could be any questions asked by everyone. So we kind of use that as a form of teaching interview. Of a lot of the work that I've done, interview has been the chosen method by a lot of the youth that I've worked with. A lot of times interviewing elders in their community or language speakers of the language.
Yeah, I'm realizing that a lot of what has influenced me as a PAR researcher has been, and maybe this is why I'm trying to cite it, is like youth development as a field and, mm-hmm. you know, positive youth development in particular, and then youth organizing or community organizing. And within those spheres, there's a lot of team builders and activities that are kind of not cited, but like used a lot. And I feel like there's a curriculum. I worked at a nonprofit or intermediary nonprofit that did PAR capacity building for networks and organizations and alliances. And so we had like a very specific curriculum. And of course, you can pick and choose from that. And you know, we would really like write out like, here's the agenda for the day and put it up on the flip chart paper and using a lot of that. So from youth organizing and youth development world, like community mapping, which I think Marit was referencing, you know, doing community walks and sometimes with maybe people from college or university who are giving kind of like a historical tour, like here's the way that different groups have been pushed out of this neighborhood or kind of looking at strengths in the community or places where there's the infrastructure is not resourced by the city or other elements. And so like doing that community mapping can be a visual, but then also just listing like what are some issues that you all are facing in this community, and then kind of paring down what they want to pick as a topic and in terms of the methods, really. And I just have to say, like, a lot from youth development and youth organizing is like that skill building. This is what surveys look like, or interviews, or participant observation, and like a lot of role playing. Like, let's do a survey. Let's create, like, or look at this survey that was done by this other YPAR project. And what are the strengths of surveys, and the pros and the cons, and the strengths and weaknesses of interviews? And then also, like, who are the groups? You know, there was one project I was part of where the young people said, we want to include adults in the people that we interview as a group. And the facilitator, I was actually in a research role, but the facilitator was kind of guiding, like, well, let's keep it to, you know, young people. And they were realizing that because of misconceptions about young people, that the adult stakeholders wouldn't take them seriously. And they were trying to impact policymakers and elected officials and other decision makers. If we have youth workers who are saying that these are problems and possible solutions in our community, then it'll give us more strength, and it's more likely they'll take action on our recommendations. So I think, you know, there's some, I do think of it in terms of like all of these pieces of a curriculum for each of the phases and things that you can pick and choose. But I do think of it as very like activities. We're facilitating activities. Mm-hmm. And even just, you know, coding data, like, you know, activities where they might have post-it notes and kind of run to the wall and try to organize the interview clips, like the sound bites or the quotations, into categories that they've come up with on the flip chart paper. And that's one way of trying to code the data, is to put them in these buckets. To me, there is a lot of overlap in terms of the methods and the process.
There's something too in that, what Dana's saying about the demystifying what research is. So I feel like within the design, whenever you're working with communities, part of that trust building is also just being like, hey, by the way, research is really just about collecting stories, looking for patterns, identifying those patterns, telling other people, and kind of analyzing what's happening in there. We can bring in like different lenses for like power analysis and thinking about critical change. And that's, I think, where the activities come into play, right? Because it's like, hey, guess what? You're probably already doing a lot of these skills in your day-to-day life. Let's show you how to like amp them up a little bit more, make them, you know, professionalize them. We're going to like teach you the secrets of what happens in the research world. But guess what? You're doing it already when you're deciding like, you know, who to sit with at lunch, or, you know, some of this sort of like day-to-day stuff. A big piece of the design for me is just also being like, hey, we can do this together. And that, I mean, there's something about what you're saying there, Dana. I don't quite have the finger on it yet, but it's like listening to you describe all those activities and those kind of components of like how you come to a question. Then how you take that question, you're like, oh, right, let me think, what's the best method for that? Let me sample it out. You know, this is actually what we all do and what we're trained to do as researchers in other settings. It's just that we're layering in this piece about joy and a transparency, right? Because we're making it transparent for the people we're engaged with, which is, I think, something that PAR and YPAR do that other people could learn from, that it doesn't have to be as opaque, that we can say, and sometimes we like obscure things when really like a lot of what we're doing as researchers, even if we're not in like a PAR realm, is still all of these things. We're just doing them kind of solo.
I mean, I think also what I'm hearing, and I know we all orient in this way, but YPAR is pedagogical. So all of us, regardless of who we're working and co-researching with, are also teaching and learn. It's praxis. So we are co-learning, co-creating, we're co-reflecting, we're iterating, we're, you know, acting, dialogue, all of it. And I think we all have experience as pedagogues. I think PAR is essentially doing two research projects at once. You are engaging in a process that you are studying, because you are studying the praxis, and so that you can hone it, refine it, and make it more effective. And you are studying the subject at hand. So I feel like there is always co-occurring multiple levels of research happening within any PAR project. And if you're working with organizers, like if we're working with youth organizers, they're some of the best analysts and researchers there are, right? I mean, like, if they don't have a solid power analysis, they're not going to create the change they want to change. So they're coming with skills, right? Like Dana and Marit said, it's like, you are just, but we're all also teachers and learners.
I would like to pause our conversation here to circle back to a few things that I've been noticing, and I wanted to ask certain questions around it, especially when, Dana, you shared your pet peeve around adults doing research with youth. So there is a power dynamics, if I have to put it in a better way. So we often hear this term in YPAR project collaboration, but then there is also this term that exists, which is power dynamics. Especially when, you know, research is with youth, power dynamics is something that we need to talk about in order to process it and in order to think through, because as per my understanding, somewhere it affects or impact data collection process as well. So could you all throw some light on how did you all navigate those power dynamics throughout the process, and did it impact your data collection and how you overcome that barrier?
When we're talking about power dynamics, we're talking about power sharing, right? So the dynamics are that everybody comes in with different kinds of power, expert power, positional power, you know, whatever, the power of your own experience. And as Dana's, like, you know, connection back to youth development, there's this idea of skills, right? So there is something about, hey, I've been doing research for a while. I went to school. I studied it a long time. So I know some skills for how to code things or how to look for questions or how to do some of that analysis, right? And so that power sharing piece becomes tricky, particularly in that moment, right? Because you're like, I've read a ton about theory, and that's where theory really comes in and some of the analysis. So you're like trying to balance introducing ideas, you know, back to this kind of activities piece, right? You're like introducing, teaching an idea while also trying to create moments for young people to see, like, does that idea apply here or not? However, the fact that I come in with that expert power and that sort of the power of that society gives me by being older, right? That it's harder for them to disagree, right? So you have to, like, figure out ways to set up moments for them to disagree and, like, kind of off ramps to, like, everything from, hey, I don't, me just simply saying, like, hey, I don't know if this is true. What do you think? Right. So it could be as small as sentence starters like that to shift those power dynamics to other modes of disrupting the power dynamics of, you know, giving them full tools to analyze something once you've taught them to do it on a, you know, on a smaller set of data. But I think that's it. I find it really hard in the analysis part.
I think being transparent about the power dynamics, also like just talking about them, explaining them. A lot of theater games show power dynamics. They do, like, show different positions of power through different positions of standing in the room. And then we talk about what that looks like and then explaining that in the research. And also, like, thinking about, especially in the analysis and the results and the dissemination, like, what is this going to get for each individual involved? So is, like, a publication going to do anything for a 16-year-old? Like, do they care? And if they do, great. And if they don't, well, then this is not serving them at all. So then what else can we do? So to me, like, being flexible about dissemination and how that dissemination, and honest about how certain things are needed for the greater research academic university as in a publication, and involving them as much as they want to be involved. And I think that's really important, is not saying, okay, we're going to write this together, because a lot of the young people I've worked with don't want to write it together, or they don't really want to write it. So, okay, so then what other way can we do this together? Can we share, like, a poem that you wrote about the experience within the writing, and then talk about it together, and then I'll transcribe the conversation we had together about that poem? Like, being really creative about how to use their voice within the forms of dissemination needed for the ones that are needed for the academic needs of our jobs.
Can I ask a question? I'm thinking about this because I'm also a teacher. So there's, you know, students come in and out, especially when it's not a mandatory space, right? It's not part of a course. But moving away from, like, youth as this monolithic, like, they're just this group, but they're actually individuals and their power dynamics among the youth. I'm just curious for you, because I face this as a teacher too, is, you know, when individuals check out They actually either just leave and don't come back. They walk out, or you can just see them becoming more and more passive. I'm curious, for each of you, do you chase after? I don't know what other word to use, but do you do follow up with every youth and like, oh, you didn't come back? I'm just curious how you tend to relationships on that front.
I think some of the projects that I've worked, well, so the most recent one was a project where they were all getting paid also to come. And yet, of course, that checking out still happens. And so, but they still physically showed up, right? So then that gave me the opportunity, because they were physically there, to do that kind of tending to the relationship. And actually, I was thinking that this is a piece of the phase that Kristen was getting at earlier when she was talking about how it's cyclical, right? And that there are actually often moments where, like, hey, project's going, everything's smooth, you're working through the phases, and then all of a sudden, like, yeah, the relationships get ruptured for whatever reason, right? Someone's checked out, something happens. If you have like a nice, lovely little linear line working through those phases, all of a sudden you have a massive loop and you may have to go right back to the beginning. And I think so, times that I've been with groups that they are still physically there and that we've reached that part, I mean, I've been like, all right, we got to stop everything and start all over with building up that relationship again, because we can't do good research together, collaborative research that's about power sharing, if we're not able to do that transparent trust building stuff. So I think there's that like loop-de-loo that happens where you have to go back. I've also worked with groups though where it has been come if you want. Mm-hmm. And in those ones, I feel like I reach out for a little bit if somebody starts to check out. At some point, I also just trust that they're human too. And fine, you want to check out, that's cool, right? Like, this might not be for you right now in that particular context, right? Because that one was more of like a self-selected group of young people. That's the one in the book, right? So it was a self-selected group of young people. So they're showing up because they care. There's no money, nothing involved. If somebody starts to go off, we tried to bring them back together. But if, you know, they're young people, their lives are full.
I always want someone with, my background is in education. I was a teacher. And I always feel fortunate for this work that I know how to like teach YPAR and teach all these methods. But it's really important that it's a group facilitation and that there's someone who has a background in social work or therapy. I wish I had drama therapy PhD as well, but I'm not going to go back to school. And so that it's not just coming from you, that that there's someone with that expertise in the room. And a lot of times it's been a youth with that expertise as well, that is able to pull back people in or go and talk to someone outside or whatever it be.
And that's my background. So I'm a clinician by training and was a social worker prior to doing my PhD in education. So that's my bias. That's what I prioritize, is like the group well-being and individuals. So like I wrote about how someday you just throw out the entire agenda. And I was thinking about this when we were doing our check-in, and it's like every single project I've ever done, it comes down to the same finding of less agenda, more hanging out. People stay engaged when they care about the people they're with, when they want to be in the space. And part of it, I think we also all kind of share an approach to, is like, we're using PAR and YPAR to create a place, a shared place. You know, we use art and cultural practices and organizing and analysis and research as tools to create a shared collective experience. And I think COVID, we had this moment as editing the book of like, we have to want to show up too. I think we all also use like check-ins, finding out where everybody's at when you're getting together, right? Okay, we're going to establish this kind of practice of like, where are you right now? Does anyone need tending to? Is anyone hungry? Is anyone worried about something they saw on transit? Is, you know, did someone get kicked out of school today? Like, tending to that before you can get to anything else. And maybe that's all you do that day. But what you're doing there is reinforcing the relationships and the commitment to this cult collective endeavor that is going to produce something valuable. And what that looks like in the end is going to be a lot of different possibilities. For me, it's like being like, I feel like shit today. Or like, I'm having a really bad day. I can't even put a sentence together. Can you all kind of carry it for me, right? And like modeling being honest, not unloading, but just being honest about where you are, because people aren't like that, much less adults with young people.
It just made me think about, there was one time where young teenage woman was sharing that she needed to get, you know, she entered into a relationship and wanted some contraceptives that were free. You know, those kinds of shares, like, I don't have to be in the center of the web, but I kind of encourage, there's this other person who you're friends with in the group, you all can go on a Saturday morning to, you know, this clinic. This is before Planned Parenthood had a lot of their funding cut, unfortunately. But, you know, but like, sometimes there'll be something specific where I'm not necessarily, I might give them a resource or give them someone else to go to, whether that's, you know, kind of horizontal or in the community or someone that has that. I also have been in projects where they're getting a stipend, and I think that they should be being compensated for their work. And it's usually, you know, after school or in a summer or some non-school hours, people are usually physically there. But then there's also, you know, I've done like a participatory evaluation project with a school district where people are coming from many different schools in a school district. So that way the teachers might be someone to talk to. Or I've also done it where it's been youth organizations. And so the youth worker at the youth organizing, youth development org might be someone to talk to. It could be about finding resources, and that works, you know, in most of the cases. But then there might be a case where we're also having to check in with ourselves, either as the facilitator or, you know, supporting the facilitators and seeing the dynamics.
We use community agreements too for that kind of thing, to be like, actually, something's happening here. Let's go back to what we started about, like what we're really committed to.
In terms of jumping in and getting into YPAR as young or like new novice researchers, like what advice do you have for those of us who are trying to push the bar on participatory and meaningful ways and working with young people and thinking about everything you've said?
Well, I'll give you advice, one from just me and then one from one of the youth leaders that I worked with. For me, is just expect the unexpected. Things are going to come up that you had no idea were going to come up. And that's kind of where the beauty lies. That's where the challenge lies. That's where the messiness and like the inspiration all comes from. In one project that I was doing, a youth leader just came to me and people weren't showing up, or people were just coming and going when they wanted. And she just looked at me and just said, "Amanda, it is what it is." And she said, "No, I want you to stop. I want you to say that back to me. Take pride in that. That is, it is going to be what it's going to be. And we're here." And a lot of times what I do is we have like a theater performance. So it's like that challenge, that anxiety of leading up to this performance when people aren't coming. So it is what it is.
I'll go off of Amanda's, because one of mine was that you can't control it all. Right. So in the same way of like expect the unexpected, like, and once you start trying to control it all, then you are disrupting the power dynamics and the power sharing required of YPAR, and therefore you've lost your way. And so that you have to be comfortable with, I often call it like the muddiness of it. Like you have to be comfortable being muddy. It's not going to look like what you wanted. It just won't turn out in the like pretty little package that you might imagine it to. And that's okay. And then the other piece is that do not start unless you have done deep work around your own power analysis of who you are in a space. That means thinking about your racial power, your economic power, your educational background, like all of this stuff. Like you got to do like the deep work of like, who am I? Why am I doing this? Who's it for? Who benefits? Who loses? What are the biases I'm carrying in with me? What are the assumptions that I have? If you don't do that, don't even start. Walk away. It's not for you.
I love that. One thing I would say is also knowing who you are and knowing what your strengths are and maybe areas for growth, it's really important to collaborate with others. So like if you're maybe less strong on a power analysis or looking at kind of structural issues and not just at the individual level, maybe partnering with folks that have a strong power analysis or bringing them in and having them give feedback or be a guest. The assumption is you do have a power analysis, but just maybe there's some activities that others have where they can have this interactive activity with young people around that. I was going to say actually too that since we were talking about curriculum earlier, drawing on, you don't have to have it all, you know, from experience in your head and, you know, but like drawing on, there are some, whether it's a handbook or curriculum or activities, partnering with those people or, but also drawing on those. And I do have one handbook source I didn't say earlier, which is from UC Davis, their Community Futures Community Lore Project. And then the YPAR one that Kristen mentioned also is out of UC Berkeley. And I think it's important to kind of recognize, because we all have areas where we could be reinforced by others, or whether it's handbooks or curriculum, but also just people, right, who have that knowledge. And sometimes it might be someone's parent or a community member, but maybe a cultural piece, you know. But I do think it's important to balance your areas for strengths with others, because I think with that kind of collaboration, even if they're thought partners with you, you're kind of shoring up like how you can show up.
Wow. So I echo what all of my friends and colleagues have shared. I think maybe two specific pieces, and one comes from my foray into research as a master's student in a clinical counseling program, so a terminal degree, and I did a photo voice project. And no one on faculty had ever done photo voice or PAR. My advisor was our statistician. And my committee was just kind of like, yeah, cool, give it a whirl. But it was not expected of me. And also, I had no idea what I was doing, but nobody else did either. And it was kind of a gift in that it was like reinforced that it's okay to not know, and that research is kind of diving into the unknown. And a grant proposal is an ideal projection of everything if it were controllable, and is never what it actually looks like in practice. That was my first experience in PAR or research of any kind, was doing a photo voice project and my committee learning from and with me, and me also feeling like I was going to mess up or fail at any point, and them just being like, no, it's always kind of like this. You can't fail. You really can't fail. I mean, unless you aren't prepared as a person and as a human to work ethically, I would say just start. Really, what I would encourage you to think about is what I was talking about earlier about in any PAR project, there's actually co-occurring kind of research happening. And if you can approach it in that way and see the process as knowledge production and things that you can write about, how do you engage with young people as co-researchers? What does it mean to bring principles of participatory democracy and negotiating of power into a research co-creation? That can be your academic production. I think those are part, like, disposition of PAR researchers is, you know, you adapt, you're flexible, and you're responsive to the folks you're in relationship with and who you're working with, and you follow the threads. So yay, research everybody. Students out there, you can do it.
You can do it.
Yeah.
You can do it.
Can I highlight one thing?
Go for it.
Just being also like transparent when you don't know, or when you did something that offended someone or the group, you know, or you were maybe having a hard day and you kind of bulldozed through something where you could have been more patient. Like, I think knowing your issues with like control or power dynamics, but also like taking accountability, like similar to art, that I think who you are and how you show up, people can tell when you're being like caring, or when you're being authentic, or when you're being transparent. And I think it really goes a long way.
One final thing, and then I promise it'll be out. But like, to Dana's point, and this is, and you've seen this with all four of us, right? It's like humor goes so far with young people, right? Like, I mean, and I don't think any of us have a hard time getting into that kind of play mode. And I think there's a reason we're all in this work. But the other thing is that for anyone that has any designs on working with young people, you should be prepared that they're the smartest people in the room, and they will know if you are authentic or if you are trustworthy before you have a chance to try to convince them. Wow. So it's best to bring your authentic self, because they will point it out at any opportunity that when it's not.
Yeah, just go ahead and put your heart on your sleeve.
Do it, because like, they know it. Like, they see it anyway.
Yeah. just put it right there on the table.
Thank you for so much for this conversation. It was amazing. I'm looking forward to publish this and hear from our listeners how they feel. And I'm 100% sure, because our listeners are new researchers, you know, budding scholars and students, they want to hear these conversations. And these conversations bring a lot of satisfaction and relief, because we are in those structures which are still rigid, and teach us to be perfect in every step of the research. Thank you so much.
Don't be perfect. No. It's impossible. No. Don't even try.
That's the takeaway.
Yeah.
Don't even try.
And there's nothing fun about it. I think that's the real thing. So thank you so much.
Yes. Thank you. I mean, it's also like, this is the other advice, right? This was so wonderful. Thank you. And thank you for this podcast. I love that it exists.
Yes. Thank you to Corey and Shikha. I think this has been really wonderful. And what an amazing podcast. I'm so glad I know about it now. And what a cool idea to co-host and, you know, have a podcast. That's also a beautiful art form that, you know, I listen to a lot of, but I love that you all are creating. And just thanks for having us. You all have been really wonderful, and also sharing of your own research and your own kind of questions as researchers has been really great to hear. So thanks so much for having us and for hosting us.
I'll just say, like, my longing in teaching and pedagogy and research is I'm really trying to focus on collective care, not as an expert, but as a thing that I just want more and more of. And so I feel like not only in you talking about your projects, but also, as you said, as a group of friends who are researching together, it's just, you can really feel that between you. So that's just really nice. And I hope my goal is to find the we that I want to build care with and do research and action and build relationships. So yeah, thanks for role modeling, you know, what's hopefully waiting through this work.
Thank you for sharing your friendship and your collective VIPAR wisdom in these last two episodes. For our listeners, you can find the citations for Dana, Kristen, Amanda, and Marit's book in our show notes, along with links to the two VIPAR handbooks they mentioned earlier in this episode. Stay with us in the season 4 as we continue to bring in new guests to dig into the methods, the messiness, the meaningful conversations, and opportunities of action research collaboration.
You can subscribe to our podcast on most major podcast distribution platforms, including Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Action Research Podcast, created by Adam Stieglitz, Joe Levitan, Shikha DeWalker, Corey Legasic, and Vanessa Gold.